Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, we'll consider a recent scandal in the world of economic policy, arising from an influential paper published several years ago that became the basis for the widespread campaign for reductions in government spending on social services promoted by conservative commentators and policy leaders, but which was recently demonstrated to be deeply flawed and possibly deliberately distorted. The moral implications of insufficient skepticism are rarely as significant or wide-ranging. Before we start, let me remind listeners that the Skeptical Ethics series attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download the first Skeptical Ethics segment, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, which appeared in Episode 2 of the Skeptical Connections podcast, and the second segment, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, from Episode 3 of Skeptical Connections, for useful background. There has been much attention lately to an economics paper from 2010 by Carmen Reinhart and Kenneth Rogoff, two prominent economists at Harvard University. It offered the conclusion that, quote, median growth rates for countries with public debt over roughly 90% of GDP are about 1% lower than otherwise. Mean growth rates are several percent lower, end quote. That is, that high national debt slows down economic growth. This claim was pounced on by conservative politicians in the U.S. to justify spending cuts to reduce the U.S. budget deficit and the national debt, in keeping with their pre-existing claims that high taxes driven by high spending are economically disadvantageous. Paul Ryan's budget proposal explicitly cited this study's conclusion as justification for cutting social benefit programs drastically. The paper was also cited in financial media, such as The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and The Economist, as well as many general media outlets, close to 100 times within 1 year of its publication. One of the authors testified before the U.S. Senate Budget Committee. Rogoff and Reinhart, furthermore, had been director and deputy director, respectively, of research at the International Monetary Fund, which has been widely criticized for imposing austerity and low debt policies on struggling nations. The 90% figure became a widely cited part of the received wisdom among conservative economists in Washington and elsewhere, including several countries in the European Union, which imposed austerity policies, largely unsuccessfully, during the EU's current economic crisis. It should be noted here that the Reinhart-Rogoff paper was not peer-reviewed. Mike Conchal of the Roosevelt Institute reports that other researchers could not confirm the math Reinhart and Rogoff used to reach their conclusions, and that the authors were not cooperative in replicating their study. Finally, just in the past few months, another team of researchers succeeded in convincing Reinhart and Rogoff to turn over the Excel spreadsheet and data they had used to track debt and economic growth worldwide, and then analyze the methodology used in their study. The results were shocking. The researchers, Thomas Herndon, Michael Ashe, and Robert Paulin, writing in the Political Economy Research Institute Working Paper Series No. 322, Does High Public Debt Consistently Stifle Economic Growth? A Critique of Reinhart and Rogoff, reported that, quote, we replicate Reinhart and Rogoff and find that coding errors, selective exclusion of available data, and unconventional weighting of summary statistics led to serious errors that inaccurately represent the relationship between public debt and GDP growth among 20 advanced economies in the post-war period. Our finding is that when properly calculated, the average real GDP growth rate for countries carrying a public debt to GDP ratio of over 90% is actually 2.2%, not -0.1% as published in Reinhart and Rogoff, end quote. Their conclusion is that, quote, contrary to Reinhart and Rogoff, average GDP growth at public debt to GDP ratios over 90% is not dramatically different than when debt to GDP ratios are lower, end quote. Specifically, in tracking public debt and gross domestic product growth among industrialized nations after World War II, Reinhart and Rogoff excluded over 10% of the data years in the set without identifying those years or explaining why. The excluded data were all contradictory to the study conclusions. In the case of New Zealand, they excluded 4 years of growth averaging over 5% and included only a single year of growth, at -7.6%. Further, they averaged all countries' individual growth rate data without weighting them for how many years were represented, so that countries with many years of positive growth were weighted equally with countries with a few years of negative growth. They lumped 19 years of positive growth for the UK together equally with just that one cherry-picked year of high negative growth for New Zealand. Finally, in addition to this questionable and distorted data handling, the spreadsheet proved to have a gross typographical error that also excluded some positive growth data from the analysis. The most important calculation, averaging the growth rates of high-debt nations, was coded to apply to a range of spreadsheet cells containing all the growth rate figures from the countries in the study. But the range of cell row numbers was misstated and did not include all those countries. This error alone changed the reported growth rate of high-debt countries from positive to negative, the major finding of the entire study. Because the study authors did not make the spreadsheet available for critique until just recently, these errors went unnoticed for over 3 years, although the false conclusion had been widely reported and was the subject of an influential book by the study authors, as well as their congressional testimony and extensive political grandstanding by economic partisans. Dean Baker of the Center for Economic Policy Research asks the most important question in a blog post from April 16 titled, "How Much Unemployment Was Caused by Reinhardt and Rogoff's Arithmetic Mistake?" He concludes, quote, "If facts mattered in economic policy debates, this should be the cause for a major reassessment of the deficit reduction policies being pursued in the United States and elsewhere. It should also cause reporters to be a bit slower to accept such sweeping claims at face value," end quote. Matt Iglesias, however, writing in Slate on April 16th, claims that it's not going to make any difference, noting, as did many other commentators, that whether or not the study was flawed, it did not prove its basic claims in the first place. Reinhardt and Rogoff's results, even accepted at face value, merely proved a correlation between national debt and GDP growth. But every skeptic will quickly note that correlation does not prove causation. Austerity advocates concluded that high debt causes low growth, but it might also have been that low economic growth pushes governments into higher debt, like a person running up their credit card bills when their income drops temporarily. The study could never have shown which way the causal link runs. Thus, it was never possible to base valid arguments for austerity policies on the Reinhardt-Rogoff study, even if the study had not been flawed. But that was what legions of right-wing commentators and policymakers, in fact, did. So, how significant are the newly discovered flaws in this study? Iglesias comments, quote, "The fact that Reinhardt-Rogoff was widely cited, despite its huge, obvious theoretical problems, leads me to confidently predict that the existence of equally huge, albeit more subtle, empirical problems won't change anything either," end quote. There are obvious skeptical truisms to be applied to this situation. Confirm research conclusions through replication and double-checking of methods. Be suspicious of research published in popular books or other non-peer-reviewed sources. Be suspicious of anyone who won't reveal their data or methods. Consider the ideological biases of researchers, especially in fuzzy empirical fields like economics. Be aware of the correlation-causation fallacy. It seems shocking that former top economists of the International Monetary Fund could be guilty of lapses in all these areas, but it's instructive. Aside from the question of research integrity, however, what moral implications does this incident have? Dean Baker hints at one aspect of the issue with his question, "How much unemployment was caused?" The austerity policies that were imposed by politically influential conservatives, including restrictions in unemployment benefits, canceled government programs, reduced procurement from private sector companies, and the like, directly impact economic activity, affecting employment rates. They also affect human welfare directly by affecting benefits levels for those dependent on government social programs. These decisions have repercussions into the future as well. As one instance, the current proposal in the U.S. to reduce inflation adjustment to Social Security benefits, the so-called chained CPI issue, promises to keep retirement benefits falling behind inflation for the rest of every U.S. retiree's lifetime, if implemented. This policy is, of course, touted as a way to reduce the national debt. Obviously, then, economic policies matter, and whether or not the economic theories on which such policies are based can be defended likewise matters. It is at least an error with significant moral dimensions when grossly flawed evidence is used to defend policies that harm people or countries. If that evidence is culpably biased rather than just mistaken, the associated moral guilt is much greater. For that reason, skeptical inquiry, caution, review, confirmation, takes on a moral dimension when applied to empirical questions with relevance to practical policy or human welfare. Similarly, evasions of skepticism, such as secrecy and avoidance of peer review, even if not employed as outright fraud or dishonesty, count as moral lapses when they prevent proper review of work that influences policy. The case of Reinhardt and Rogoff is instructive in another way, however. Although their paper and book have been the basis for extensive conservative campaigning for economic austerity policies, they themselves were not the strongest austerity advocates. In fact, their actual policy recommendations included anti-austerity measures such as sovereign debt cancellation and direct cash transfers to consumers, policies that are anathema to political conservatives. But their flawed research provided a powerful tool for conservative policies by making it look as if austerity was supported by actual empirical evidence rather than ideological preference. Recall that this was not only false, but a flagrant correlation-causation fallacy. Yet Reinhardt and Rogoff did little to counter that claim. Thus, their research was not only wrong, but misused, and the researchers' liability runs to both such problems. This was a case where many warning flags were available, and in some cases commented on, but a failure of skepticism within the academic, governmental, and public intellectual communities allowed error, fallacy, and falsehood to influence policy affecting the most vulnerable parts of society for years. Whatever wrongs were committed by Reinhardt and Rogoff, it was wrong to allow them to go unchallenged as well. I'd be glad to hear your comments and responses directed to skepticalconnections.com.